It's time for This Week in WordPress, episode number 304, entitled Back from Holiday. It was recorded on Monday, the 5th of August, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I'm joined, as always, by some fabulous guests. I am joined by Mark Benzacane, by Birgit Pauli Hack, and by Tim Nash. It's a WordPress podcast, so what do? We're going to talk about WordPress. We talk a little bit at the beginning about the WordPress 6.6 performance improvements. Then we have an extended discussion about what's new in 18.6 of Gutenberg, particularly around data views. That gets quite complicated. We talk about the new redesign to the learn.wordpress.org website and how it's making it so much easier for people to learn all the different bits and pieces about WordPress. The team, which is focused on accessibility, would like some new team reps. We also talk about WordCamp events, the fact that WordCamp Asia tickets are now on sale for next year, and the dates for WordCamp US 2025 have been announced. And we also have an extended conversation about Perplexity AI and about your WordPress.com's website's data being used by that search engine. It's all coming up next on This Week in WordPress. This episode of the WP Builds podcast is brought to you by GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And by Bluehost. Redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by Omnisend. Do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. Hello, 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 good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Very nice to have you with us. We had a week off last week because I went and threw myself in the ocean lots of times, and it was really exciting. It was lovely to take a bit of time off with my family, and that was really nice, but we're back to it, and WordPress is the name of the game. It's episode number 304, and as you can see, I'm joined by some fabulous people. I'm making gestures like that is fabulous people. There they are, all the fabulous people. Let's start over there. Let's start with Tim Nash, who I'm look at it. He's changed it. Doom speaker, it says now. Tim Nash is joining us at the 11th hour. We were due to have Remkes de Vries on, and unfortunately, Remkes is not feeling particularly well. So best wishes, Remkes. I hope that that illness departs quickly. But thank you, Tim Nash, for stepping in. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll do my best Remkes impressions throughout.
Okay. All right. It's going to have to start with the removal of most of the... Anyway, there's a visual. Right. Okay. So Tim Nash is going to do something a little bit interesting. He's got a biography and he says he wants to read it out in the style of, wait for it, Edgar Allan Poe. I don't know anything about Edgar Allan Poe, right, but I'm guessing this is going to be fun. So,
well, I asked ChatGPT to write me a bio.
Oh, really?
And this is the bio it decided I should have, and I decided it should be read out in the style of Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
So, in shadowed realms of digital dreams where sites risk being hacked and defaced, Tim Nash rises as a sentinel of spectral light, vigilantly guarding the haunted domains of WordPress through the endless night. A consultant steeped in arcane wisdom.
Stop laughing.
It's great. Site scripting and SQL injection. His knowledge forms an impenetrable shield, thwarting the hacker's sinister designs. Tim helps you keep your defenses strong, ever vigilant, protecting both your site and its users from lurking threats. For those who seek fortress strong and true, Timesh, the guide will chart your course in the WordPress realm where spectral shadows waltz and dance. He is the unwavering beacon, teaching and training to keep your site updated, secure your steadfast guardian and spectral fool.
Oh, bravo.
And for anybody else, Edgar Allan Poe did quaff the raven.
Okay. Man alive, you carried that off beautifully. There's a couple of things to say. I am now going to refer to you as the unwavering beacon. That's my favourite bit of that. I don't even know what that means, but I like it. That was brilliant. Bravo.
It looks like bacon too. Unwavering bacon. But
yeah. I prefer that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So that's Tim Nash in the style of Edgar Allan Poe. That's brilliant. Right, recover and relax. And we've also got down there, Birgit Pauli-Hack. How are you doing, Birgit?
I'm good. Thanks so much for inviting me and having me and letting me be on the show again.
You're very welcome. So Birgit has told me that she wants to read her bio out in the style of Snoop Dogg.
And, I don't know anything about Snoop Dogg.
No, she hasn't.
I can do it in
she German literally or something like that. Didn't say that to me. I just thought it'd be kind of fun. No, but I'll read your bio out if you prefer.
Right, sure.
So Birgit Pauli-Hack is the publisher of the Gutenberg Times, which is actually a place where I end up getting a ton of the news for this show. You know, each week, the people that make WordPressy content, we just crib off each other, and it's this endless cycle of cribbing off each other, and that's how it works. But honestly,
that's for it's for.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, so go and Google Gutenberg Times and go and check it out. Anyway, it's a site with news around the WordPress block editor and beyond. Birgit also hosts the regular live Q&As on YouTube and hosts the podcast Gutenberg Changelog. Birgit has been contributing to the WordPress open source project since 2014 and contributes now full-time, sponsored by Automattic with two T's. Hey, something exciting happened to me today. For the first time ever, my AI transcription tool got Automattic spelled correctly, ever. Which is kind of impressive if you think about it. It actually knew that there was a difference between the Automattic with two T's and the regular word. I thought, God, it's getting better. We'll no doubt end up with an AI content in there. But thanks for joining us, Birgit. Appreciate it. And third person we're joined with is Mark. Can I try it?
No.
Yes, it's going to get
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Benzokine. Kane.
There you go.
Kane is the second,
isn't
it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. It is. Yeah.
I'm
so now you can edit it and post and act like you got it right the first time.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Anyway, Mark put in a really, really long biography, which I probably am unable to read. So I tell you what, Mark, easiest thing is if I just hand it to you and in a few short sentences, you tell us what you do.
My name is Mark Benzokane. I've been a WordPresser for like 100 years and since Edgar Allan Poe died, I think. And I do marketing for MainWP and some other people, and that's about it.
That'll do.
I'm still waking up. I'm in California, so I'm.
Yeah.
I'm
crazy o'clock where you
it's
are.
It's like I don't know what time it is. It's still dark. It's still dark out.
At the at WordCamp Europe, I don't know if any of you watched the thing. I know that some of you were there, but if you watched it, Matt Mullenweg, one of the things that he wanted to do, well, you might not use these words, but one of the things that he wanted to inject into WordPress was a bit of fun. And I thought to myself, this show's been doing that for ages. What the heck? You know, we've been doing fun for it. Like Edgar Allan Poe, what more could you want? But thank you to all three of you for joining us today. We'll get on with the WordPressy news. Just a couple of bits of housekeeping before we start. The first thing to say is, the platforms are kind of locking us out. More and more, the platforms are sort of not allowing the comments to go to and fro. Facebook is a particular example. If you used to go to the Facebook group and comment in there, you can't anymore. They've killed the API. So the very, very best place to go these days is just go to our, well, just the page where we've got this listed. And I can't actually find it. Yeah, there it is. That's the one. Go to wpbuilds.com/live. Share that with all your friends and your colleagues and drag people in. And the more comments that we get, the more fun it is. So that's wpbuilds.com/live. If you go there and you use the chat widget, which is on the right-hand side on the desktop, then you need to be logged into Google because it's a YouTube comment thing. But you'll notice in the top right of the actual video is a little black box. It says live chat, and you can pop that out. And you don't need to be logged into anything. You just need to put your name and that's it. So you can put some comments in there if you like. So wpbuilds.com/live if you'd like to do that. And we are joined by Birgit. Was she one or two? I can't remember.
The other.
Last time we had both Birgits on and it was highly confusing. Because they are the Birgits. That sounds like a band from the 50s. The Birgits with their top hits, Gutenberg. So Birgit saying hi. Thank you very much. Oh, there you go. The other Birgit. That's really nice. We're being joined by Dirigo Creative. I guess that's the name of a company. Saying checking in from Raleigh, North Carolina, I'm guessing. And then there's a chap here. He's a Doom speaker. He's saying hello. That's kind of nice. And I'm guessing this is you. And then Cameron joining us all the way from sunny Australia. Good morning from... What the heck? No, wait. He's trying to be Peter Ingersoll. I like it. This is clever of him. It says, good morning from sunny Connecticut in the Northeast US. It's 23 degrees, 74 degrees Fahrenheit. Hold on, I think I've grabbed the wrong script. This is what Peter Ingersoll does. And look, he's done it. Ah, genius. Greetings from sunny Connecticut, where it's 20. That was good. Cameron, top marks. You've nicked a comment before it was actually written. Absolutely loving it. And hello there, says Patricia as well. Keep the comments coming. If you've got anything you disagree with or anything you agree with or any direction you want to steer us in, please do that. It makes the show a lot more interesting. All right, let's get stuck into it. Let us share the screen. This is us. This is wpbuilds.com. I always do this at the beginning, trying to encourage people to subscribe. If you put your email address in this little box here, then we'll send you two emails a week. One when we produce the podcast on this is the show, and I'll parcel it up as a podcast episode and release it tomorrow, Tuesday. So you'll get that. And then also you'll get the podcast, the interview kind of episode, which we do on a Thursday as well. So no spam guarantee, maybe a little spam around New Year's or something like that. I don't know. Just basically it's two a week. That's all we do. And I would like to give thanks to our sponsors who at the moment and a long time, it's been GoDaddy Pro. So an enormous thank you to them. And we've been joined fairly recently, a few months now, by Bluehost. So a big thank you to them. And the most recent one of all is OmniSend. So GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and OmniSend. Thank you very much for your ongoing support. Keeps the lights on over here. And all right, let's get stuck in to the bits and pieces that we've got. So WordPress 6.6, as I said, I had a week off last week. So some of these news items might be a little bit more than a week old, but nevertheless, they've got some merit in them. WordPress 6.6 improvements in terms of performance. Adam Silverstein. I think Adam's a Googler. I could be wrong about that, but I've got an impression that Adam might be a Googler. Yeah, Birgit's nodding. Thank you. He is hard at work on the performance side of things for WordPress, and he's written up a little performance report to say what's happened. And essentially, bits and pieces. I think it's fair to say that the performance team have ground out over the last 18 months, absolutely boatloads of improvement. I get the feeling that maybe the low-hanging fruit is a little bit harder to find these days. But WordPress 6.6 Dorsey was released to the public, includes some significant performance improvements, especially inside the editor. Template loading has improved by a notable 35%, which sounds pretty amazing when you say it like that. For a second release in a row, significant new features were added. So we got loads of new features when 6.6 dropped. And I don't know what the metrics on this are, but it just says, whilst ensuring a minimal impact on server response times. Although the default 2024 theme has actually had a little teeny tiny regression in performance, just 7 milliseconds, which is 5%. And the same is actually true for classic themes. If you're using a classic theme, for example, 2021, it has also had a regression, but by much less, just 1%. So 1.2 milliseconds, something like that. And then it gets all complicated. And at this point, I don't understand anything anymore, but there's loads and loads of complicated things that I've highlighted to make it look like I know what's going on. But I don't, so I'm not really going to explain it. Anyway, I don't know if any of you wanted to jump in on this, but obviously the, you know, the job of making WordPress performant is really, really important. Anybody want to jump in?
Well, I really appreciate the work of the performance teams, and they are the experts there. So reading that, it's really amazing. But I have no clue about any of that. So, yeah, I know their caching is involved and all that, but that's what's behind the scene. It's just, yeah, beyond me.
It's kind of, it is one of those things that you just have to take it on trust, don't you? You just sort of hope that they're doing the work that, you know, that essentially it is getting faster year on year. I'm of a mind where I will never, ever spot 7 milliseconds. Like, there's no way my brain is going to sort of notice that. But obviously, they're doing all this testing. They write it up. It sounds like it's a, you know, it's an important thing. It's gone backwards.
7 milliseconds.
Sorry, say again.
It's not 7 milliseconds on your typical site, though. This is like...
No.
These are on their testing
base. They're testing and vanilla.
Yeah. When you're talking about a site that has lots of heavy work going on, maybe it's got commerce thing on there, maybe it's got a bunch of plugins on there, lots of, and it's got hundreds of thousands of posts, that 7 milliseconds becomes a much larger number, and when you're, and you will start to perceive that. So every time you shave just this tiny little bit off on the sort of top percentiles of heavy usage sites, they'll see the bigger benefits. And obviously those of you who have got super optimized sites at the other end will see less improvements each time. But we went for a long period where WordPress was getting heavier and performance was sort of, it could be handled by plugins. And that meant that the core team, there wasn't much going into core to reduce things down. It was an afterthought. So just having a performance team who was actually going, do you know what? If we just stop indexing all of these things, we make that everything faster. Which is something that a lot of people have been saying, but and it would be said, oh, well, that's a plugin territory if you want to speed up your site. And it's like, that's a really weird thing to say. It's plugin territory to speed up your site. It should be core territory, and it's become that now, which is really good to see.
I guess also, if you've got a website, not just with thousands of pages, but if you've got, I don't know, hundreds potentially of concurrent visitors, you know, all trying to hit the site at the same time, these little tiny microscopic, let's call it that, these teeny tiny little improvements will add up to, I don't know, you might be able to serve 10 more, 15 more, 100 more users at the exact same moment, given the same infrastructure that you've got. So, but also Google has made that really important, you know, Lighthouse scores and all the core web vitals that we were panic stricken about 5 years ago. And we're in a race with the platforms that have got tons of marketing cash that can spend ads on, you know, in the Super Bowl and things like that. So all of these little things matter. And although it's really finickety, it's really interesting reading these posts. And I actually did read it, but I do struggle to understand a lot of it. But just the little things like, okay, we spotted that there's two things going on in core that can be combined into one thing. So in this case, That was to do with, it says here, priming transient and transient timeout options in GetTransit. Get transient doesn't really mean a lot to me, but essentially the takeaway from that is, okay, there's two things happening at once that has been for a long time. We've now made it into one thing. It's minor, but you know, if somebody goes through the whole project with a fine tooth comb and works all of those little kinks out, that's fabulous.
And that's not just speed, that's reducing memory and CPU
right. usage.
And that's where you can go, okay, that's where your concurrent users get the benefit. So now instead of having 1,000 users, you can have 1,002 users on the site at the same
time. Right, right.
And that's really critical when you scale up. And you're literally saving the planet every time you do that, because using less server processing resources uses less electricity, burning less fuel in horrible places.
Do you know, it's really interesting that although I occasionally make that connection between, you know, unoptimized site or poor performing site or, you know, slow, laggy site or, you know, including images where you don't need them or oversized images or what have you, it's very rare that my brain ticks over into the environmental debate. And, you know, this article by Adam, for example, doesn't make mention of that. It's done in a sort of very technical way, which is obviously his thing. And he's speaking to a technical audience who understand all of that. But I think maybe an easy way through would be to describe the environmental impact of some of those things on a typical site, because that I can kind of get hold of. You know, in a typical year, how much less carbon might I have on my website? And I know that there's projects which do all of that kind of thing. But yeah, Tim, good point. Birgit, you've had a go, haven't you? Mark, anything to say on this before we crack on?
The only question I have, and this is because when it comes to what the performance team is doing, I'm truly ignorant. So this may even be a totally ignorant question. But I'm wondering, what are they doing about, are they working on speeding up the dashboard? Because when you talk about all these other people who have the money to buy big ads on the Super Bowl and things like that, basically their dashboard and everything is all built into one. So it's really fast. And when I don't do a lot of dev work, but when I do dev work, when I'm sitting and waiting for my dashboard to load things, you know, and I know that that's uncached data and all that stuff, are they doing anything to improve that?
I don't know, but my intuition would be that the answer is yes, but I'm going to say let's put a pin in that.
Well, let's Tim take the transient one as a good example. Uh-huh. Transients affect absolutely everything.
That's true.
Almost certainly they, unless you're sitting on a some sort of managed hosting, chances are the transient is sitting in your database. So they're also benefiting from the auto options, bits, indexing options. So even in that, just that one release, there should be significant performance improvements.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm. So steady away on this particular article, but I think if we were to round up the way that the performance team has improved WordPress over the last 18 months, I think it's pretty amazing, really. The fact that we didn't have a team like that, and then now we've got some really rather intelligent eyeballs casting their eye over the core of WordPress. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see where WordPress would be right now if that team hadn't have existed. I think it would be quite a different, more molasses than oil. Let's just put it that way. Okay, so thank you for those of you that are continuing to contribute. Appreciate it. Courtney Robertson's joined us. Thank you so much. Who else? Andrew Palmer saying hi as well. Pete Chineri is joining us. Thank you. And yeah. I think that's all we've got. Oh, no, and Elliot Richmond is saying WP Builds, putting the fun in WP. Yeah, preach it, Elliot. Thumbing through my best dad jokes as we speak. Yeah, that's it. That is the measure of my humor. It's plumbing new depths. Dad jokes always welcome. Put as many as you can find, Elliot, into it. Okay, here we go. Let's move on. This one is firmly in Birgit's territory. As we said, it's the Gutenberg Times is the project that Birgit's, well, I think not entirely, but largely responsible for. And we have this, the Gutenberg 18.9. What's new in Gutenberg? And the answer is quite a lot to do with this in particular. This was the headline article, Data Views. And actually, it occurred to me, Birgit, if you're just new to WordPress, and in fact, even if you've been using WordPress for ages, this term, Data Views, doesn't necessarily kind of leap into your head as to what it is. So can I just throw it at you and tell us what's new about data views and indeed, what are data views?
So yeah, to get back to, I totally see what you're getting at. It's pretty much part of that WP admin redesign, but it's right now solely visible in the site editor with list views for pages, for templates, for patterns, and they're experimenting or... it's pretty much the new design of the WP admin and all those list views. They're adding a few things in there with this release of 18.9 that was that you can reorder the columns. And you also could add some custom fields in there. And what I really like on the data views is actually the different layouts that you can have. Yeah, the grid view and what you're right now showing. And now they're working on the bulk actions. So if you check multiple items in the list and what are the bulk actions that you can do, we know, okay, deleting or editing. But yeah, what else is going to be there? they're also looking at support combined fields. So if in the filtering, so if you want all those published by a certain author, but not the draft ones and not the pending ones. You want all those that are published in a certain category from a particular author, maybe. Yeah, so combining that and then on the page of the pages section, you you see which one of the pages is actually designated to be the front page, and they just updated that icon there. So it's a lot of incremental changes every 2 weeks. And it's really interesting to see how it all comes about. There are quite a few experiments going. One is the data views for the posts. Yeah, so for now you can, whoever is new to WordPress is get a whole lot of confused because the WP admin is pretty much in two views. One is the WP admin as we know it, and the other one is in the site editor where everything kind of looks a little bit more modern and revamped. But then how do I get to the posts? You have to go all the way back to the WP admin login to go to the posts. So there's, that's the next part of it that's going to come into data views. And what was the other one?
Well, on this particular article, the main focus that I think they wanted to inject was, you know, more flexibility in this data view. So as we saw in the little video, and apologies if you're listening to this, but I'll link to the post and you can see it's a short video. It's 16 seconds long and there's no audio. It just shows how you can, I don't know, view things as a grid, but then you've got like this kind of more faceted search so you can delve deeper and you can change the amount of columns that you've got. It's just a much more modern design. And actually, Peter in the comments says it feels like Notion. I don't actually use Notion, but Notion's like a place to dump your brain, isn't it? It's a,
I think unlike Notion... And I thought the same one as Peter. And when I first heard the term data views, I got really excited because data views means data binding, which is like basically a visual way to represent data that you can pull from other places. And then I looked and went, that's not what this is at all. This is just redesigning the posts.
They're still data views. Yeah, you pull data from somewhere.
They are, but they are perhaps not the... the fantastical future I was hoping they were. And I think, in Notion and Obsidian and in loads of other sort of systems, the idea of a data view is normally you can effectively bind data into maybe a table or into a pattern and pull that data across. And I think that's the same terminology that's used in, say, Drupal.
But it's also the same terminology that's used in the components. So if you're a plugin developer, you can use your data that you pull in from wherever you come and put it into a data view component. And these components are all available to you. Yeah, you have all the grid view, you have the
well, they're not available to you on
columns.
You can decide. They're available in the block. This doesn't mean blocks, though, does it? This is something separate.
They're available under the npm package wordpress.com /components, or if you go to storybook of components, you can actually see them all, and that's why they are kind of a little bit hidden, because they're still working on the components, but those will be available to any plugin, to any theme developer who has additional usage for it. Yeah? And that's what they do. They pull in data from anywhere.
Is the idea of something like Notion that you can basically throw any kind of data at it? I don't know. So it might be like video URLs, it might be audio files, it might be dates or anything. And then in some way you can sort of map those things to all the other things and then display it in some unusual way. Like you said, a table, but it might be some sort of spider diagram or something like that.
Probably better described as a wiki. Sorry.
Yep.
No, that's okay. No, I think it's not going to go for the end user that you can kind of put in an, maybe that's a future usage in a plugin. You cannot kind of connect it to an Excel spreadsheet or a Google Sheet and then have it pull in. You need the connector to it. That still needs to be developed from a plugin developer. Yeah. So, but the display of it in the WP admin or on the front end, if you want to, can be the data view components that are, smaller, like web components, but they are Gutenberg components that are UIs that you don't have to develop yourself.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, much more sort of general, really, based around, you know, pages and posts and things like that. So we were just looking at, you know, grids and how you can do those, and a sort of faceted search, really, so that you can not only filter by one thing, but by multiple things. So you could say, show me everything that was published before this date by this author, which at the moment you certainly can't do sort of out of the blocks. With a vanilla site. And then little things like this page view. And again, apologies if you're watching this, but links are in the show notes, where you'll be able to combine multiple data views into sort of one place. So they're saying here, for example, you could put in the same place the author's name next to their avatar, next to the name of the post, and just put them all into one spot. So it doesn't have to sort of occupy a column all of its own. And I guess in some way that is what we're talking about. And then consolidating design tools across a bunch of blocks, and they're listed on the screen. So Gutenberg 18.9 brings border controls to gallery, button, heading, paragraph, quote, blocks, social links, and term description blocks. And the image and search blocks also get margin support. So again, some little incremental improvements there just to sort of unify things. There's a whole load. Again, if I just scroll down the page, you can see there's absolutely boatloads in there, but they were the top level items.
Yeah. Gutenberg had about 245 PRs.
Wow.
So, You won't go through all the line items there, but I think it had about 84 enhancements that are tiny little enhancements that go for a big one, and then 72 bug fixes.
Do you know, Tim, the curious thing about the about things like Notion and Obsidian, you know when you sort of see you go to their landing page and you see all of those data views, and they all look really impressive, and I always get sort of kind of suckered into it, and I think, oh, I'm going to try this tool out. And then I try it with my ordinary set of things, like, I don't know, I'm doing shopping lists and I'm trying to remember wedding anniversaries and, you know, stuff like that. And I can never conjure up a decent use of a data view that they're sort of suggesting would be useful. To me, I've kind of ended up back with Evernote. And I don't know if you've come across that. It's like an arcane platform. And basically, it just gives you posts with tags. And with search, that's kind of where I want to be. So this sort of WordPress data view kind of fits, it maps to my head quite well. But all those other quirky things that you can do with Obsidian, and obviously if you're mining data, that would be really useful. But I just can't seem to find a use for it.
A big
stuff bet. Yeah.
And he really do use it as like a second brain type structure.
Yeah.
So, I use data views quite a lot. But I also, combined with templates, they're super powerful. Even if it's just a simple thing of being able to go, okay, I'm having a meeting with Bob. So I can just create a new meeting from template, and Bob's details are there. They're already pre-populated.
Oh, I see.
Now I have that. That's technically a data view. I'm bringing data from another note through to pre-populate this. So now I can go, oh, I've got details about Bob. That's brilliant. That's where I'm sort of coming from there. The future for WordPress and for plugin development sounds really great. We can get into a scenario where we can easily just bring in data from anywhere and show it in the WordPress admin in a really unified way, which we haven't had before. Because let's face it, plugin UI is interesting. And part of that is that there has been absolutely no UI standards prior to that for anything to do with plugins. So we can give plugins a nice, easy, and by easy, not necessarily needing to learn a huge amount of React and have to dive too deeply. But if we can provide them with literally, hey, you point your REST requests to this data view endpoint, and it will do all the work. It will put it on the screen for you. That's going to be amazing. Just think of all the various plugins that you use that just are about showing you data ultimately.
Okay, so an example of that, you mentioned this guy, fictional guy Bob, and you want to have a meeting with him. So at some point you find the data, which is Bob. So yeah. there's data which is Bob, height, weight, whatever.
Yeah.
And then in some way you can tell that data, make me a meeting with that thing, and it will create another, if you like, custom post type and it'll pre-populate all the relevant bits. Like, we might not want his weight, but we might want his date of birth, for example, and that'll come in and you click a button. And okay, that's fascinating. I hadn't really thought about it like that.
Yeah, that's called a CRM.
In that particular case, but imagine it was like a real estate website or something, and I don't know, you had a spreadsheet of, well, I don't know, like 20 houses, and you just want to chuck them in. You tell the data view, okay, here's 20 houses with all the bits and pieces. Now go and make the post for me. Mark, anything to say?
Well, the only thing I have to say about that, all of that, is that's all well and good. Now, we at Main to BP, we use HubSpot, right? Which does all that stuff, right? But everything is so freaking convoluted and crazy that you have to like get certifications for this, 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 and this in order to be able to use it. And so my only thing is, this is really cool, and I like everything that Tim is saying, but we need to focus on making it easy first.
Okay.
before we say, hey, we can do this and this and this and this. And I think that this is one of the things that the divides you have between engineering and then like UX, right? Is like engineering says, hey, we can do this, let's make it happen. We can do this, let's make it. And then the UX guys are like, okay, well, but how do we make this easy?
Because I misexplained. My problem is that we let in engineers do UX.
I see
this as a future where we don't. Well, we tell them, you provide the data, you don't touch the UX, because it's being given, all your job is to give them stuff. And that was where my future sort of like, I had this wonderful idea where thoughts of engineers not touching UX and thereby
being
much nicer.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, that's going to be a fantasy.
And that's the thing is, I guess that's kind of what I'm saying though, is that I think engineer, and believe me, I love engineers. I mean, how can we not? But they're the ones, they come up with these great ideas, and the thing that drives engineers is, I can do this, and now I'm going to do this, right? And then they leave it out to everyone else to figure out how to make it look pretty. That sometimes is very difficult.
Isn't that the normal between a Word developer and a Word user, where you know that only 20% of this huge software is going to be used with a normal person, that's half insane. I like the notion part, and I really wanted to get into it, but I already had systems in place that I would have a whole lot of work to give up to give it all to Notion, and then I don't have the discipline for that or the time to kind of move it over. So I'm kind of that all-in-one. I'm more the person who said, okay, do one thing good and I'll figure out the connection somehow.
For me, everything is now it's a Google spreadsheet, but it might be an Excel spreadsheet. So everything is like, I just throw the data out to that and then I manipulate it the way, because that's what I know. And it's easy and I don't have to relearn a whole thing and all of that. Yeah. And I can do with an Excel spreadsheet, especially now with ChatGPT. If I don't know a formula, I just say, I have column A that does this and column C that does this. And then I've got another spreadsheet that does this. And I want this and this and this to do. Boom. I've got what I need to do. And within 10 minutes, I've got my spreadsheet doing what I want it to do. And I know that that's not necessarily efficient, but it's efficient for me because I'm not going through a learning curve.
I don't think it's the least efficient. It's not modern. It's definitely not modern.
Yeah, it's definitely old school.
I know Multiplan was one of the first spreadsheets. Yeah, and that's kind of from the 80s or early 90s kind of thing. Yeah. But it's still hasn't changed how you use a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Fine, my Lotus Notes is doing well.
I was going to say Lotus Notes is what I remember. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
But really interesting though, because this whole thing, we're at some sort of inflection point, aren't we? Where we clearly want to display more stuff than we typically have. We've decided that there's massive limitations on what we've got. And also we do like the way, modern UI and UX looks. And it'd be interesting to see where we are in a few years' time. I doubt that something incredibly complicated is going to come into core, because that doesn't seem to be its job. But the the options here for developers to push things will be quite interesting. Andrew Palmer has said...
complicated. Stop letting them be complicated.
Yes. Make it easy. Yeah, okay. Andrew Palmer says some page builders, some cloud page builders have this facility already. So you can see your posts and pages in a list view. Okay, thank you. That was the page view, I guess, that we had. And coming to core, he said, it's good that it's coming to core.
Just very quickly, Nathan, I have 42,000 notes in my Obsidian vault.
So they're discrete. Are they little? Are they points of data? So is it 42,000 bits?
Note is just a markdown file.
Right.
So it's 42. That file will be normally one or two things.
And you can bind those 42,000 things to any other. Gosh. Yeah.
Wow. But I can also search them. And they've got nice graph views with tags.
Yeah. And there's something very satisfying about sitting there, like just wrangling all of that data into hundreds of views that only you can understand. It's completely impenetrable to anybody else. I do that. It's great. Yeah, I needlessly get into like tagging of things that just doesn't need to happen and downloading things that, anyway, blah, blah, blah. All right, there we go. So that was a piece. It was called What's New in Gutenberg 18.9. It came out on July the 31st. So again, it'll be in the show notes. Speaking of data views, Anne McCarthy, who we know very well, she was in charge of, well, I'll just read it here, actually. She says, as the test lead for WordPress 6.6, and from my experience running the full site editing outreach program, I remain obsessed with how we can bring more people into testing key parts of what's new in WordPress and empower people to share feedback in the project. And so what we've been talking about, data views, Anne McCarthy has just thrown this piece together where she created a playground website. We won't go into that, but it's nice, quick, easy to do. And then threw 200 pages worth of content in there in order to stress test how the data views would work and what the pain points were. And it's kind of interesting, almost immediately, even though Anne is completely wedded to the project and, you know, using it in and out all day, every day, immediately ran into problems of the likes of data view switching layouts shouldn't reset the filters, but apparently it did. Filtering by numerous authors caused frame shift, which was then apparently updated. Gotten rid of. When trying to bulk edit on a site with many pages, the bulk edit options counts up. Changing the items per page to 100 results in poor loading experience, and a few more. We don't need to labor the point. The point is there were little gremlins in there, and the intuition that she has is wants to take this up to a 2,000 page website, so 10x the amount of data in there and see how this goes. And because of that, because of the pain points that were run into, the idea is, can other people try this as well? And so that's what this page is about. She wants to figure out if this is, you know, unique to her or if there's other pain points. So again, I'll link to this in the show notes and you can then join Anne McCarthy in finding out how these data views work for you and if they're broken or if they're slow or if something behaves in an unexpected way. Anne's blog is nomad.blog, and this is called Join Me in Testing Data Views. So if you want to contribute to that directly with Anne, and then I presume that will lead back into the project itself. Anybody want to comment on that? Probably not. Should we crack on?
Actually, I just want to say I like that she actually gives you examples of what to try at the end.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, they say, yeah, I'd love to test it, and then they don't because they don't know where to start. So I think that's, you know, trying to encourage people to test something, giving them a place to start is a really good move.
Thank you, Mark. And I'll just mention what they are. So some suggestions for things that you could do, low hanging fruit, if you like, would be set up this thing then you click a button. There's literally a button to create a playground version. So click that, wait 5 seconds, and then try things like create a new page, search for a page, try filtering for multiple things, in this case, author and status, change the layout and use the pagination controls and see how that goes. And then there's a link to a Gutenberg GitHub repo where presumably you can offer some feedback, so some ideas of what to test. It's kind of a neat idea. Rather than doing it as just sort of launching your own little initiative. In this case, Anne, I've got this thing. I just want people to help me out. There is my page. Off we go. Let's see if anybody contributes. Anything on that, Birgit or Tim, or shall I just crack on?
I have. The FSE outreach program was actually experimental, and it now kind of evolved into, instead of FSE outreach experimental, the channel is now outreach. So where you can come in and if you're testing some of that and you're not sure what the bug is about, because the biggest problem with Gutenberg repo filing a bug report is that you actually need to isolate where it actually comes. Yeah. So it's not too high level, but it's hard for someone who is not a programmer or has done many, many bug reports in customer service before, to actually nail down what the problem is. Yeah. We're having discussion in the outreach channel, of course. Is it known behavior that this does so and so, and we do a back and forth of it to figure out, is that a bug that needs to be reported, or is it something that is by design, or it's something that's a plugin conflict? Yeah, I hate those. So if the listeners here have some just want to check in, come to the outreach channel. We are really nice people. Yeah, it's a safe space to ask those questions, and also, yeah, get help if something doesn't work out. There's a plugin or a theme developer. So I'm just making the pitch here. That's the follow-up program from the FSE outreach program. And I'm sure we're going to get that call for testing also into the channel from the official testing team. Yeah, to have more ideas, or instead of four greater instructions for planning instructions, kind of have more of it. And that was actually the superpower Anne has or had with the calls for testing and FSE outreach, that she had a whole set of testing instructions prior to the WordPress release. So you could, as a normal user or a developer or anything, kind of just go through the call of testing and learn about the new features by trying them out with a little roadmap there. So I really like that, and I hope we can kind of continue that as well on the data views.
Thank you.
And other things that come from WordPress 6.7.
Thank you for that, Birgit. Courtney's saying that she is also a huge Obsidian fan. I could put my notes into GitHub or Obsidian's publish option. I do a lot of that sort of thing. Second brain. What's Zettelkasten?
It's a type of way of organizing your notes.
Oh, okay.
Into various categories.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm a much more flat tagging kind of guy. Just something I'm imagining my approach is much more straightforward. And then you've responded. Saying
I to put my comment up.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Literally says, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, please, it literally does say that. But it's in a public forum. So there we go. Anyway, there we go. That was Anne's cry for help, if you like. Join me in testing data views. So all that stuff that we talked about. And now something community related. We did actually mention something about this the other week, but this article came out on the. Mark, you've gone all dark. I don't know.
I'm in a co work. The lights go out. The lights go out if you don't move for like a while. And apparently I haven't moved for a while. So I may have to step away for a second and do a little dance in the middle I'll be right back.
Okay. I'll tell you what, I'll hide
actually,
you.
Actually, I'm going for the Edgar Allan Poe look. How's it working for me?
Nice. You dance. We'll be back. We'll have you back as soon as you're ready. So this one we mentioned fairly recently, which is all about Learn. Learn has had a bit of a facelift. And although, you know, obviously modern design looks better than old design, or at least in my opinion it does. On the left is the new Learn website, and on the right is the old one. I think you can probably spot the difference. But there's been a lot that's been done here, especially around these things called learning pathways. And these learning pathways are designed to be kind of like LMS, you know, something a bit more complicated. And the idea is that you go from one pathway and you do a course. And if you can see here, you can see that this course over here, the beginner WordPress user course, comprises of loads of lessons bulked into little modules. And the idea is that these pathways will sort of neatly segment. In the end, there'll be like a spider diagram of things that you can do. You can go from one learning pathway directly to another obviously, you know, if you want to become a developer, you'd probably start with the basic ones and then move into the more advanced ones and what have you. But I just wanted to point out that this has all had a bit of a facelift. And yeah, there's going to be a lot more content. It says here, two more learning pathways are on the horizon geared towards designers working with WordPress and those who like to contribute to the WordPress project. I know it seems like a bit of fluff, but, you know, making something like that website look attractive and have an easy to understand sort of LMS structure in the background, you know, if we're trying to promote this software, having it easy to understand and having learning materials that you can get your hands on for free, might I say, for absolutely no money, that's really nice. So this piece, obviously, is on make.wordpress.org, and it's called Meet the New Learn WordPress, but obviously you can just go to learn.wordpress.org and check it out for yourself. But I really like it. It's really nice. I don't know if there's anything to say there. If there is, jump in. If not, I'll move on.
I like it.
Yep.
I like it too. What I really like about the courses is that you can actually point to single lessons. So if you as a user know, okay, I don't know exactly how the media library works, and obviously nobody really knows how it works, but you can get a lesson of what is there and then move on. You don't have to go to the course. The same thing when you are working with clients and they have a hard time with their content creation. Now you have a place, instead of creating that video yourself, which sometimes is a service that people do, but you can just point them to the single lesson in the WordPress beginner user or in the beginner developer place, and then say, well, go through the lessons and then come back with your questions kind of thing. Yeah. So you don't have to do all that explaining yourself. You have official material that is up to date, and you can point your clients to it, yeah, to learn more.
It's really nicely laid out, isn't it? The whole thing just looks really, really nice. Yeah. And then the killer feature, really, I think, is this button. You know,
You
click that, and you get to where you want to be. So I'll do it. It'll probably kill my machine, but
is that a playground? Okay,
it's playground. Yeah, but
very nice.
But obviously, it's going to dump. I can't actually comment as to what is in this prepared lesson. Sure. I haven't actually seen it, but I think the intention is, if it's not already got the content in it, that at some point it will have content which is adjacent to the subject at hand. I'm not sure if this is, let's quickly go and have a look, I don't know, themes, plugin. Yeah, you know, it's got no particular, let's have a look at posts. No, there's no particular pages or posts in there. But I was speaking to Jonathan Bossinger the other day, who has a great deal of input in this whole project. And the idea is that at some point, you know, you'd click that button and the learn site that was brought to being inside of a playground would have content that reflects what's going on in the actual lessons. Isn't that nice? Yeah. Such a cool
little thing. Yeah, I just came back from WordCamp Canada, and I did a presentation called the problem, parenthetical S, problems with WordPress. And one of the things that I brought up was that onboarding is very difficult kind of for new people. And I think this is a good step towards, some of us who have people come and say, how do I get into WordPress or whatever? This is a good way to, before it seemed a little bit more messy. I hate to use that term, but now this is really clear cut, and I really like it a lot.
Yeah. You've got filtering options, so they've got this idea of level, advanced, beginner, intermediate, and so on, and then you can filter down like that. But then you can filter down by, block development. Let's apply that, and we've only got one thing there. Presumably, that's going to be a lesson within a course, or it's a course itself, don't know.
Yeah.
No, it looks like it's just on the course level there, because I was probably on the course page. But it looks really nice. And of course, all of this is completely free at the minute. Beginner WordPress developer learning pathway, which is, you know, 59 lessons, it says, you know, so 59 bits of content to watch. Beginner WordPress user might be good for your clients, that one. You know, if you've got a client roster and somebody new is joining the company and you want to help them get started. Intermediate WordPress user, intermediate theme developer, develop your first low code block theme. Gosh, it really does span a lot, doesn't it? Introduction to the WordPress API, REST API, converting a short code into a block, developing your first WordPress block, community team program supporter task. Ooh. And it goes on and on. There are three, it's paginated, there are three lots of things that we could look at. Amazing, really.
I am curious, like that first, the beginner WordPress developer, and this is just throwing it out there. Do you think that it said 59 lessons? Do you think that that is intimidating to people? It's just kind of
the number 59, you mean?
Yeah, the number 59.
I think they've done a great job on the screen. You can see that they've, you know, they've put it into these little accordions. So in effect, you could view it more like, I don't know, 10 topics or whatever we're looking at now. But also, I think the approach, so for example, if we launch this first one, which is WordPress and web servers, you know, the basics of the basics, you'll see that there's a whole load of content, written content, including code examples. And then the video itself, which goes with it, is a mere 6 minutes. So it's little bite-sized bits of content. So if it is intimidating, I think it's a good way of kind of spreading it out and
breaking it down.
Yeah, maybe there's hours and hours of content in here, but it's done in little bite-sized bits.
Yeah.
I don't know. Good thought, though. Anybody want to comment on Mark's question there?
Any development's going to be, I guess, intimidating depending on where you're starting from. I think part of the problem is I don't think that there should be a course called Beginner's WordPress Development. That in itself has a problem. Are you a PHP developer who's going to be coming into WordPress? Are you a JavaScript person? You never programmed in your life? Do you know what a web server is? All of these would have a massive impact on whether that 59 lessons are worth any of your time, or whether you could have maybe got away with one or two of them in a specific subject.
You could just pick the single one that you want.
Well, and the nice thing about how it's laid out is I think as long as you can get people to click in initially, they're going to go, oh, cool. Well, I know this, I know this, I know this, I know this. And it's not drip feeding this. And I think that's a really valuable thing because so many of these courses, especially if they're commercial ones, are driven by keeping you in a funnel that drip feeds along. Right. Whereas this, you can go, actually, you know what? I know about web servers. I could probably just skip this. And I don't really care. I think it's quite nice. It hasn't gamified it, which I know, I suspect is probably actually on the cards that they are going to gamify this and everything's going to be required.
Well, so interestingly, a lot to that point, Elliot Richmond popped up. Sorry, Mark, your head got chopped off there. It said it would be nice to attach badges. So I guess there's a little bit of gamification going on. WordPress profile badges to say that you completed a particular course, like when contributions are made. That's kind of nice, I guess. And then, let me have a look. What they're doing if the recording with me. Is that about the WordCamp? Oh, is that your talk at WordCamp Canada? I don't know what the drama is that you're talking about there, but was there a drama?
Well,
let's not get into that.
I won't get into it. Yeah.
Okay.
But if anyone wants to know about it, they can contact me personally and we can talk about it.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, gosh.
It's not that much drama. It's like, you know, in the world of WP drama, it's like that.
Oh, no. Those ones are like,
you zoom right in on that. Okay. One thing that was curious to me was whether or not you could save your progress, because it says here, I'm not showing my screen, it says here 0 to 59 lessons completed, exit course. I'm wondering if when I log in it will keep a track of where I've got to, because that's great.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing that I would dip into for a week and then forget about it for a month and then come back and be like, did I do that one? I'm not sure that I did that. And that
will have really some check marks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. Shall we move on? That's enough said about that. But yeah, bravo. Lovely, nice redesign. Well done.
And the courses are really, really good. Yeah. The video and everything, it's well done. Yep.
Yeah. High quality, basically. I know that the team that are doing that, the volunteers, as well as the, you know, the people that have seconded to do it, have put a lot of effort into it. And it's a lot of hard work making educational videos. It really is. So bravo. This is Joe Simpson Jr. It's on make.wordpress.org. It's /accessibility. This came out a couple of weeks ago, so it's a little bit stale. And in fact, the date of the meeting was, in fact, couple of days ago, but I don't know what the outcome of that meeting was, so I thought I'd raise it anyway. Maybe this has all been solved, but it's just really to, I guess, say that with the the advent, for want of a better word, Alex Stein stepped away in June from contributing to the accessibility project in WordPress. And Joe, it looks like, is going to be stepping away at the end of August. He's done 3 years in that role. He says, we're calling for accessibility team reps. And it says, ideally, all Make WordPress teams should have two representatives, which allow them to share responsibilities, divide tasks, and cover each other when needed. There's a little bit more information here about what a team rep is expected to do and what that actually means. But if accessibility is your thing, and you see that this void created by these two people leaving is a problem, then if it's been filled already, apologies, but I don't know what the outcome of that meeting was, so I thought I'd raise it. So there you go. Again, anything? If not, we'll move on. Okay, we'll move on. And this is just a nice piece of news coming out of Yoast, and it's to say that the Yoast Care Fund, the recipient, I don't know if this is an annual thing or not, but it's a nice bit of community news. Estella Rueda is the recipient of the Yoast Care Fund, and it says for her contributions to the WordPress community. And I just wanted to give both Yoast and Estella a bit of a hat tip. Quite nice to be sort of recognized for those kind of things. Again, I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that. I'm just breezing through these now because it's 3 o'clock already. Gosh, about an hour. I know. Where does it go? Okay, in which case, hat tip to Estella. Thank you, Yoast. Community events. We had a WordCamp WordPress London meetup the other day. That was kind of nice. Really nice to see so many faces there. We had about, I don't know, maybe 50-something people in the room. Yeah, it's definitely on an upward tick. It's really nice. It's right in the center of London as well, and the location is fabulous. It's at the Klaviyo offices, and not a company I'm particularly familiar with, but they've got a beautiful office on, I don't know, third or fourth floor of this building, and it just overlooks all the high rises in London. Nice. Really lovely. So highly recommended. And I believe Tim Nash is going to be talking there at some point soon. Right.
The Halloween special.
Yeah, ghosts and gremlins and things. Yeah.
At Gallant Poe.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be wearing a,
Was that the first one? That wasn't the first one since the pandemic.
No. It's come back. I think it's probably the fourth or fifth. That's a guess, in all honesty. But if you fancy coming down, I'm going to make the effort to go as many times as I can now. I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to be there. More or less every month. It's a bit of a schlep for me, but I'm going to make the effort. Anyway, apropos of that, this is WordCamp Asia. Believe it or not, tickets are available already. Feels like WordCamp in Taipei was just like a few weeks ago. Of course, it wasn't. It feels like it was, yeah. And if you're into WordCamp Asia,
it says the tickets aren't available.
Actually, when I first put this page up, which was at some point last week, that wasn't there, and I refreshed it this morning and I hadn't caught sight of that. You know how these things go, though. They release them in batches. I think it's a bit of I don't know why they just let them all go out in one go. I guess it's to stop people, I don't know, people are on holiday or something, give them a chance. But anyway, the tickets will be on sale. If you see this thing, first batch is sold out, don't worry. There's always loads more coming. But it's going to be held in the Philippines, February the 20th to the 22nd in 2025. So those tickets are available. But also, WordCamp US. I had to sort of double take when I saw this. I was thinking, I already know about this. This is, it's not news, but it's 2025. It's been announced. So this time, more or less next year, and it seems like we're going back to the cadence that we always had for WordCamp US, which was go to a place twice and then go to another place. And so this, for a second year in a row, is going to be at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. So same as what's coming up in September this year. My understanding is they do that because it's easiest to secure like a higher quality of venue or something because you're booking it for more times, you know. So I guess it makes that a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's certainly one reason. The other reason is that the whole team knows how it works.
Yeah.
Once they went through the first time. So it's not a whole that same effort to put it together a second time because the sponsors are known, the sponsor area is known, the contractors that work with are known, and the venue is known. Yeah, how to do the venue.
Yeah, they may get a better deal. They may get a better deal on it.
But, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good point. Okay. Just a couple of comments. Marcus Burnett saying, oh, hi, Marcus. He's saying he's popping in. He's a little bit later than usual. Thank you for joining us. He also says, plus one to Tim's comments, WordPress developer means lots of things. WordPress is the sum of many parts. And then Patricia is joining us. Oh, sorry, Mark. Apologies. Let me hide that. The Yoast Care Fund is much more frequent than annually. Thank you. I didn't know that. You can nominate someone you think deserves it. They have a cap and give €500 per nominated accepted person. Do you know, Patricia, does it have strings attached? Do you need to spend that $500 or euros, on a particular thing like travel or something? Or can
I
you
don't
just,
believe so.
No,
it's just a straight right? up.
Yeah. Nice. Just a pat on the back for those kind of things. Oh, says Courtney, those dates versus back to school season are terrible. Okay, so this is interesting. So a couple of weeks ago, we had this whole WordCamp Asia thing. No.
WordCamp Europe.
Yeah, it was WordCamp Europe. And it was colliding pretty horribly with a major Muslim festival called, I'm going to say Eid, but everybody that I say that to says you pronounce it not like that. Anyway, that one. Eid al-Fitr or al-Fitr. Apologies to all of you who know how to say it. But yeah, there was a collision and the dates had been created and it was immovable at that point. There were too many obstacles to unpick it. But that's interesting, Courtney. What are you saying? That they literally coincide with like end of term or something? In the UK, that is fully in the middle of school holidays. I mean, not in the middle, but Every single school in the UK will be on holiday during the latter part of August. So that's going
to... In the US, school tends to start end of August,
right,
all the way through September, depending on where you are in the US. Okay. And yeah, yep. So it can be pretty challenging.
So in the UK, it's normally, they normally try to get it as close to the, you know, the Monday or the Tuesday of the beginning of September, something. So it's often like the 4th or the 5th of September or something like that. So that will mean that it really is colliding. And often that little bit at the end of the holiday can be kind of, you know, special time kind of. So we'll see how that impacts things. WordCamp US date says Marcus, I've been around the first week of school the last few years. Okay. Okay, maybe that's something that needs looking at. Anyway, there they are. If you were wanting to go, then at least you know, 26th of August.
But I think they've kind of struggled with trying to find the exact right time to do WordCamp US because at one time it was, originally it was closer to the end of the year and then everyone complained about it being Thanksgiving, Christmas and all of that. And, you know, that holiday and, you know, maybe we just have too many holidays in the US.
This time around,
I don't think anyone would agree with that.
Yeah, it's on the 17th of September. Well, I've got these written in my diary. I'm not looking at the webpage, so if I've got these wrong, I apologize. But basically, it's on 17th to the 20th of September. So, you know, latter part of September, which is quite different from the dates we got there. Mm-hmm. But it also is fully in the middle of the week. So, you know, Tuesday through Friday. So you really do have to take that out of your work schedule. So that's interesting.
I do like that though.
You do. You treat it as a work event. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much in favor of it, of WordCamps being part of your week. I know it excludes certain groups as much as it includes other groups, but certainly as a parent, giving up a weekend has much more connotations than simply saying, I'm going to be at a work event for that weekend. You're giving up time with your family. And that's a much harder thing to justify to most people.
Yeah. Yeah. And then both you and I were at the WordCamp Whitley Bay event, but that was just the one day, right? So that kind of had much less of an impact. It was a Friday, kind of Fridays since COVID, nobody works Friday. Interesting. Anyway, they're the dates. You now know. So you can buy your WordCamp Asia tickets and you can at least start planning if you want to go to WordCamp US. Right. Okay. So this is it's sort of a bit of self-promotion. I apologize about that. But it's a podcast that I recorded for the WP Tavern with two people at WordCamp Europe in Torino not that long ago. It was with Elena Panchiera and Chiara Peneta, and it was all about deafness and people being able to consume the web if they're deaf. And to be honest with you, when I saw, and the reason I interviewed them, because I saw that they had a presentation about this, and I thought, that's curious, because when I think about accessibility, it very, like literally none of the time does my head go to people being deaf, because I kind of just had the assumption, well, everything's available, it's words and it's pictures. And that seems to be the thing that most people are thinking about, you know, is there alt text on the images and can you read it? Is the contrast good and all this kind of stuff? But honestly, I got such an interesting schooling from these two, especially given how important video has become. And some of the takeaways that I got were really interesting. So for that podcast, I do a completely faithful transcript, like literally every single word is what they say, like word for word. And if I can't understand the word, I listen to it over and over and over again until I'm fairly sure I've got it right, or I delete the word. No, I don't do that. But they both said, curiously, sometimes that's not what we want. Sometimes we want like the expurgated version, because trying to keep up, If you're trying to keep up with the speed that I talk, and we might have a fast talking guest on, and there's an hour of content, by the end of it, you've read loads. They were saying sometimes we just want the gist of it. You know, on a YouTube video, we don't want every single word. We just want to know roughly what's going on. Anyway, fascinating subject. And if you haven't thought about how difficult it may or may not be for people who have impaired hearing, go and have a listen to it. And it only got published the other day, and I've hopefully we'll get in touch with them and find out what they made of my transcript. I don't know. But anyway, there you go. Right. Anybody got anything about that?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just stopping in there. Definitely need to listen.
I'm going to choose it. I'm going to say, Mark, you go first, and then we'll go to
I think it's really cool as a person who turns on subtitles for everything and reads along with everything. And I'm not as practiced as say a deaf person would be. I look at it and I think constantly, how do people keep up with this? Why would they want all of this information? And it's interesting to hear it like straight from the community that these are designed for, that they say, you know, actually we don't. I mean, I'm very curious to listen to the whole episode now, because I what I've speculated, it sounds like they feel pretty strongly. So,
There was a whole lot in there. And also, you know, if, for example, if you're watching television, there are certain categories of transcription. So, for example, you may wish to have a transcription which transcribes the noises that are going on. And obviously, you know, in a podcast episode between me and some other people, there's hopefully not much in the way of noise. But if you're watching, I don't know, a horror film,
right?
Like the noises could be really significant.
Yeah.
And Tim's smiling at this point. I suspect Tim enjoys a good horror film, given his proclivity for Halloween and doom speaking. It might be important to have those noises transcribed faithfully, accurately, whereas you might not want any of that. And you might just want the sort of, a parenthesis, not that's the wrong word, a sort of paraphrasing of everything that's gone on. Anyway, the point being, in a web which is increasingly dominated by video, this stuff needs to be thought about. And honestly, I think the average age of the four of us is not 15. But if you look
speak at for what, yourself,
okay, average, thank you. Yeah,
my average age,
your average age, yes, yeah. but if you stare over the shoulder of a teenager, it is all the video. It's everything is a video. Right. You know, it's just video to video to video. It's pretty phenomenal. And so we're building. You know, this is more about what the future of the internet is going to look like. Go check it out. Episode 130 on the Tavern. Birgit, did you want to say something?
Well, I'm with Mark. English is my second language, so it's not what Mark does, but we also have always subtitles on English movies, or even on the German ones, because sometimes it's dialect or it's a different accent and it's hard to follow along. But I also know that there are plenty of people who also don't want the full, watch the full 1 hour live streaming. They just want to get the gist of it. And yeah. It doesn't matter if it's if you can hear it or not. You just don't have the time. So summarizing a video with the salient points is really something that helps your content anyway. Yeah. So putting together some summary or something is really important too.
Well, I have to say, for me, I don't know if everybody else is like this, but even if I want to learn how to do something and I go and find a YouTube video or something like that, I don't want to watch the whole video. I'll either watch it in double speed or I'll look for the bullet points. What do I need to do? This, and this, and this. And so that seems to be, I think that's a human thing in general. So you just want to get to your answers as fast as possible.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So Peach is saying, it's interesting. Most people only think of blindness. Yeah, that's where I was at, Peacher. Reaccessibility, but so much more to it. Elena and Chiara are doing great accessibility work. Yes, but if you are producing audio or video content, it's definitely interesting to go and listen to that, because it might not be that the faithful, perfect rendition of your podcast episode, the transcript needs to be exact. The sort of downside of that, I suppose, is that it's more work to create an expurgated version. Although AI, that was the other thing that came out of the episode, because I'm quite skeptical about AI. We'll come to that in a minute. AI, from their point of view, has been phenomenally cool, because suddenly you can plumb in you've got to trust the AI, right? But I think broadly speaking, we can all say, if you put in a 10,000 word article into ChatGPT and say, make it 500 words, broadly, it's going to get the gist of it. Now, obviously, if it was super technical, probably not. But AI has transformed this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You can make alternative versions. You can do the Spanish translation and the Italian translation and the Japanese translation by clicking a button, and pretty phenomenal. So anyway, there you go. I'm going to move on, if that's all right, but I'm going to stay with the topic of AI. This beauty. WordPress.com is joining forces with an institution, company, I guess, called Perplexity. I don't know how this stuff works, but the key proposition of Perplexity is, instead of being a search engine, their moniker is, we are an answer engine. And the idea is, you go and ask it a question. So it's not kind of the same relationship that you might have with Google, where, I don't know, you want a map and you want multiple things happening. I think Perplexity is more about, okay, here's a problem I've got, tell me the answer. Now, it would appear that Perplexity's thing is to go and scrape the internet, as you'd imagine, and then give you the answer. Now, the problem for people like us, content creators, and people who are, pitching websites for people who want to create their own content, is that increasingly this is creating a bit of a barrier. Google, its job is to, well, at least its job was to, you put in a query and it will send you links to websites. And you click on those links and, hey, everybody's happy. Google got their thing and we get traffic. But in this scenario, you don't get traffic, because Perplexity's job is just to give you the answer. And there's been a bit of a brouhaha about, look, Perplexity's gone out, scraped the internet, and by all accounts, and you can see it on these Verge articles, Perplexity's Grand Theft AI, and another one, Perplexity's cutting checks to publishers following plagiarism accusations. The accusation is basically that they're managing to find their way around people's wish to have their content protected. So think robots.txt. I don't want Perplexity to have my content and serve it up, and I don't get any credit for it. They're getting around that. And anyway, so all of that, now WordPress.com is going to surrender its content, for want of a better word. But Perplexity has come forward with this idea that, okay, in return for your content, we will give you some of the ad revenue and we will share it with you. No idea what that'll look like. I'm imagining it's like a bit like a Spotify kind of thing, where you get a teeny tiny teeny bit. If you've got a super popular site, it might work for you. If you've got like a normal site, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, I just think this is fascinating. We're just pushing new boundaries. WordPress.com is going to give up their content. And I was very careful in that I read it. It said, if you want to opt out. So the word there is not if you want to opt in. If you want to opt out, we already offer the ability to opt out of content sharing. So the box is there to tick. But unless I've read it incorrectly, you have to go in search of that box. So, yeah, I don't know what you think about all this. It's a bit brave new world, but it kind of certainly a bit of a watershed moment for content creators, I think. Over to you, if you've got anything.
I guess I'm going to ask you a very simple question, which is, Google's been doing this for a long time. In that, if you think about Google's knowledge base and OneBox and all of this stuff, Google started off, as you said, with this idea that a very simple deal with you as a website owner. You let us take your data and we'll send users to your site. It was a pretty fair exchange in many ways. But over the last 10, 15, 20 years even, Google has slowly but surely been sending less and less people to your site because they've been delivering the answers themselves. They even now have an AI bot that does exactly this.
All right.
But you are happy to give them the data still. So you still clearly see the value in that deal.
I guess holding
up Google as the thing that I want isn't the case. I'd rather that Google wasn't doing that. Actually, that's not even true. Honestly, I don't really have much of a position on it because none of my content gets that sort of reach, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But if I was like, iFixit.com, where the whole point is to, you know, you provide an answer. How do you repair a Samsung Galaxy S whatever phone? We'll give you that information. If you rely on, ads, for example, and even now though, Google, although it does give you a bit of that, it does sort of, you do get that flavor of other things, don't you? Like it might show you a map where the local repair shop is and it might show you alternative listings. It's not perfect, is it? None of it's perfect, but this does seem to be straying into new and interesting territory.
The second thing I was just going to bring up is that most people don't come and visit sites.
Mm.
You said it earlier.
Yeah.
They're on their phones watching videos. So there's a whole shift where the second largest search engine for a long time has been YouTube, but it's quickly being caught up with by TikTok and similar. People aren't searching "I fix it" on Google to how to fix my iPhone screen. They're going to be searching on YouTube how to fix my iPhone screen.
Yeah, right.
YouTube literally puts a box saying, "You cannot leave our platform. How dare you try to click on this external link?" And then in a very tiny print, "Okay, I really do understand the risks of clicking on this link." Same things. If you go on any of the social media platforms, and you link to your stuff, there's no way that gets promoted. You'll find that weirdly your reach, for better term, suddenly reduces for that given post.
Yeah.
Because the social media systems do not want to go to your site. Nobody wants to send people to your site anymore. Is this not a way of at least getting the data that you from your site? By the way, I'm playing very much a devil's advocate.
Oh, no. I think that's the argument. It's interesting, isn't it? Because trying to figure out what the publishing incentive is, you know, if your incentive is just to be a great custodian of knowledge and you just want to, you know, give your knowledge away for free. But if you're like a local journalist or something and you've spent ages researching a particular thing and you discover that, you know, your website doesn't drive any traffic and the only model we've got these days for journalism is ad-based, you know, I mean, in the UK, we've got something slightly different, but it's only for one institution. I think it does present problems for what the future of the internet looks like. If it's going to be an ad-based model, which it has been, that's problematic.
But I remember a few countries. Germany was one, or some publishers in Germany and in Spain the same, that they were actually suing Google to pay the publishers for the snippet that they put in because they have advertising on there and using somebody else's content to show it to their users. So and then I don't know if you have used Perplexity per se. they actually give you links where you can learn more and where you can see a video or something like that after you are having a question there. At least in the system where I am in, Perplexity. But it's also, I'm with Tim there, where there was, we liked it when Google were kind of harvesting our content and putting it in the AI and then giving it out in answers. But all of a sudden, we don't want to do it with AI anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Google has an AI. AI for 1998.
I'm not entirely sure that we were all that happy with it back then. I just think we're just learning. True. We're just figuring it out, aren't we? And it's, you know, when it was a fairly blunt algorithm that obviously people were trying to game but didn't really understand it, but they knew it was an algorithm which, if you could actually unpick it, you could figure out how to make it work. This is just something so interesting, you know, and it's so quirky, and I think it's going to really, well, undermine is the wrong word, but upend, make it difficult to figure out what your publishing workflow looks like if you're trying to make it into a career and you're trying to make your website pay for itself. But also, I think I do think if you do put something in telling Perplexity, do not scrape my content, and then it does scrape your content. That's a little bit concerning, isn't it? Because it's kind of like, I'm going to take it anyway. I don't really care. Well, and actually, it's interesting. Perplexity didn't do it. They employed a third party who did it on their behalf.
I mean, even getting around that, back in the days when RSS was a thing that people actually wanted to have,
right.
The second that you ended up with, everybody would start off with their brand new blog and it would set the RSS feed to show the entire post. And then within a week, it was out for a snippet because they realized the bots were just taking that and publishing it elsewhere.
Yeah.
The second you post on the internet, you lose control of that content. That's whether or not you legally think you have, morally have, but in practical terms, I publish something, it is gone.
Yeah.
They could easily argue, we didn't scrape it from your site. We scraped it from Mirror over here, which and that's where we got it from. So there's so many arguments. But if you publish something on the internet, it's on the web.
It's on the internet.
It will be an interesting tightrope for the PR department at WordPress.com to have to tread, where, you know, I would have an expectation that a proportion of their user base have a supposition that my content is mine, and I didn't need to go out there and tell the bots to stop finding it. That should have been the case. So I completely agree with you, Tim. You know, you click publish, you lose control of it. You know, that's in a sense, that's what you're trying to achieve, isn't it? You know, you put it out there and it's gone. It's just going to be interesting to see how these publications who, you know, have resorted to all sorts of things, you know, just filling the page with ads or putting up paywalls so that you can only see a proportion of it and hoping that you'll subscribe. It'll be interesting to see what this adds into that mix and the rate at which it changes our expectations, you know.
Just make sure your snippet has your website link in at the very beginning of it.
Yeah.
So that at least you're, right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there we go. Yeah. I'm gonna have to rush a little bit. I'm just gonna go right to, do you know what? We're on time. There's about 8 other pieces that I was going to mention, but now that we've kind of run out of time, I don't think I'm going to, because that's where the show ought to end. And I know you lovely people have got better things to do, and I've got to take my son to the gym in about 10 minutes. So if I start droning on about other things, I'll get in trouble with him. So apologies for making you read things, which we never talked about. That's my fault, but that means that but that's it. That's probably what we've got time for. There was a whole load of other stuff. The newsletter, which comes out tomorrow, which, as I said at the beginning of the show, you can subscribe to. It'll have a load more links for other bits and pieces as well. But time's up. That's all we've got time for. So it just remains for me to say a big thank you to Tim Nash, to Birgit Pauli Hack, and to Mark Benzacane.
There you go.
Yeah. I had to think of Novocaine. And as soon as I think of Novocaine.
Novocaine, Benzapain. Yeah. I mean.
Benzapain.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you for joining me today. And thank you for anybody who was in the comments today. Really appreciate that. It's always a little bit slower in the comments during the holiday period, but I appreciate all of those people that came and joined in. Just one quick one from Cameron. He said, we shouldn't be surprised that a multi-billion dollar corporation is doing things typical of a multi-billion dollar corporation just because they use a WP logo. Ooh, and on that bombshell, I'm going to ask you all to give me a wave, if you don't mind. Can we raise the hands? Give us a wave. Oh, yeah, nice. Okay, everybody did it. First time. And we'll be back next week. I don't know who's going to be on the show exactly, but we'll be back next week. So I will see you then. Thanks so much. Take care.
All right. Bye. Good to see you.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.